What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to the March 27th edition of OTN's Level Up Live, your home for the hot takes in gaming news. My name is John, and I am joined, as always, by the King of the Courtside King, Joey. What's up, buddy?
John, doing well, doing well. It's been a little busy at work, as per usual, I feel like, on the show, but we're getting through it. It's going pretty well. We're on the cleaner side, the greener pastures, per se, of summer camp registration. So I'm glad to be working toward the end of that. I also rearranged my desk, which I forgot about. And now as I go to, like, touch things, I'm finding them in different spots. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, Joey, fun fact, you're not left-handed when it comes to using your mouse. So I don't know why you put it on that side of the desk. It just makes no sense.
It just be like that sometimes.
It do be like that sometimes. Nation, it also do be like that on social media. Make sure you're following the show on X/Twitter/Instagram, so all that fun stuff, at OTN Media on Threads and Instagram. That is OTN_media. While you are on the social media platforms, pay attention, please, because your assignment has changed a little bit. Still follow Joey at Courtside King. That is at Courtside King. If you're looking here on Twitch, which you should be, you'll see it there on the mugshot of Joey below that mugshot real quick. And then you can find myself at a new handle, because apparently Fiasco was a very complicated handle for people to find on social media. So, Joey, we all know how much I love puns. So this one is dedicated to you. I thought of you when I thought of this, and I got your approval and everyone else. A new handle is This Thing John. Yes, it's not a play on Is This Thing On. It is This Thing John. Simple as that. Probably easier to spell than PHIASK0. AKA Fiasco, but nonetheless, that is the handle for now. We'll see how long it irritates me before I change it back. We'll find out. Nation, live show is the place to be to watch Level Up Live, but have no fear. We understand you have lives, so we do have a podcast version of the show available roughly 24 hours after the airing on Twitch. You can find it on your favorite podcatcher of choice. Just look up at Level Up Podcast. Extra credit. You have an Amazon Prime account. We know you do. Do not lie to us. Joey will find you. That means you also have a Twitch Prime sub. Please use that on OTN Media today. Earn our eternal love and affection and a back scratch from Joey himself. OTN Media for that Twitch Prime sub. All right, Joey. It's a Wednesday. That's because of the NBA 2K League prioritizing games for Thursday and Friday. So I do apologize. What in the world are we talking about tonight on Level Up?
Yeah, absolutely. We do have some Nintendo news, not the happiest of news, but we will be covering that. We have the PS Plus monthly games for April 2024. PlayStation just announced those, as well as a new feature that's going to be pretty cool for players who might get stuck on certain things, whether that's hunting for collectibles, trying to jump over a ledge. You never know. These clips that they have in the works should be able to help you out with those. On the Xbox side of things, we have an all-new white and all-digital Xbox Series X potentially coming this holiday. Some new support for cloud gaming, potentially more stores coming to the Xbox console as well, in addition to a few other nuggets. WoW growth is continuing to go up, so we'll be jumping on that. Talking a little bit about those numbers, as well as a new Overwatch-like game using Marvel Heroes called Marvel Rivals. That is just some of our topics of many that we'll be touching on today.
Cool beans. As I send out tweets to let people know we are live. Simple as that. All right, Joey, we have our topics, which means it is time to transition to our drink of choice, because it is not a Level Up podcast unless we have adult beverages. Most of the time, not adult beverages, but hopefully we're trying to swing things back in the right direction. Joey, your beverage of choice for today, episode 334 of Level Up Live.
Sadly, not accompanied by some fancy bourbon this week. I do have a different drink, though. I am drinking a LaCroix Limoncello. A little bubbly water with some lemon.
Did you put any vodka in that?
There is no vodka. Nope, just straight up sparkly, bubbly, lemony goodness.
No tequila. All right, fam, looks like I'm carrying the show again. I made an ill-advised purchase several months ago, and I'm just now getting around to it. As we all know, the original Four Loko is no longer with us because the government said alcohol and caffeine is a no bueno. Probably that does not stop idea. Monster.
Oh, no.
Monster's hard seltzer, 6% alcohol, caffeine. It is not an energy drink, so do not worry. I've already had a couple of these. This is the best flavor by far. This is their Scary Berries.
Oh.
Easily a 10 out of 10.
Very 10 good. Out of 10. That is very a high good. Rating.
Probably the best seltzer, hard seltzer I've had. I don't know if we can call it a seltzer. Let's call it Hard Monster. But nonetheless, it's really good. Tasty, delicious, good flavor. Don't taste the alcohol. Super dangerous.
Can we see that puppy's label again? I didn't even know Monster made alcoholic beverages.
Surprise, surprise. Everyone's been on board. Look at that right
there. Ooh, okay. A little red eye action.
Yeah, so what was that? It's called The Beast. Funny enough, the white can that comes in there, which is the sugar-free Monster, if you will, not sugar-free in this case, it actually tastes horrible as an alcoholic beverage. Not a fan. The can is still cool. It's just like the ultra white can for Monster. It's got the cool little texture on it, but the flavor itself, easily a 4 out of 10. Easily a 4 out of 10. Yeah. Have not tried the two other flavors, which is original, which is shocking because that's normally the one I go for first. Mm. And the other one is peach. I'm not a big peach fan, so I'm a little hesitant. But nonetheless, I will be sampling those later on down the road, if you will, and I'll report back as well. But so far, the berries, easily a 10 out of 10.
Wow. I love that. 10 out of 10 rating coming in. Speaking of, you know who else has seltzer? Our boy Aslin Brewery around the corner here.
Oh, my God. Have they sponsored the show yet?
Not yet, but we're going
to
take a trip
over there.
Then they
don't get Airtime Nation. We are ready to go for the show. we need to go over to the brewery and hang out there. And
we
sample.
Do. We do. I need you to try some of the seltzers over there now.
Yes. Yes, we'll have to do that. All right, Nation. That's enough talk about adult beverages. Yeah. So we're going to transition here, which means we are going to head into our very first topic, which is Nintendo. But before we do that, we'd have to remind you that this week's episode of Love Live is presented by Gamer Bites, bite-sized gaming news delivered weekly directly to your inbox. Sign up today, otnmedia.org/GBSignup. Joey, Nintendo is up. Let's go.
Absolutely. As I said, guys, we finally have Nintendo news. It feels like every, 2 to 3 weeks, we get some little nugget for Nintendo. They don't really have much, and then they kind of drop it all together in like a week of directs and announcements. Unfortunately, this is a little bit of a slower week. We do have news. Not the best news, though. Nintendo is making some changes to its U.S.-based workforce. Unfortunately, due to the latest industry trend of everyone laying off everyone, Nintendo is also joining into that party. We don't know the number of people affected yet, but Nintendo will be laying off a number of their contracted staff. Generally speaking, this is going to impact a lot of their QA testing. So a lot of like those quality assurance workers. Unfortunately, that position, I mean, regardless if it's Nintendo or anywhere else in the industry, does see a lot of turnover. And it's absurd given the crazy number of hours they have to work. In many instances, not the greatest of conditions as well. And I'm not saying they're like shoved down into a basement and they're not given food and water. But it is long, long hours. We're talking like a lot of these people are 12-hour minimum for a lot of those positions. So we do start seeing unions popping up. Blizzard is one of the recent ones with a union kind of in the works. Raven over as well under the Activision umbrella, also trying to bring up a union. We have Sega working on union as well as of today. I believe they just ratified that. So we're seeing unions pop up for this workforce. Unfortunately, Nintendo, I don't believe, has unions in place, and now we are seeing layoffs as a result. Again, this is mostly impacting contract workers. We don't know the full number as of yet, but there is a slight bit of positive news as well. Some of these contractors will be converted to full-time. So again, a number being laid off, but some will be made full-time. That is going to be a bonus for those who do end up in that direction. I don't really know if there's too much else to cover here, John. It's super unfortunate the layoffs continue to go throughout the industry, especially when we continue to see a rise in profits for a lot of these companies, whether that's game sales themselves, whether it's just overall income. We do continue to see that rise still post-COVID coming down back to reality, but still in some sense a rise. We are seeing a lot of articles come out as well, though, on the side of like PlayStation, for example, saying that games cost a lot more to make today than they did back then. Microsoft kind of corroborating that as well. And we've seen layoffs in both those cases to kind of make up for that trend of games kind of not going in that direction, where we're spending more to make games and not necessarily making more as we sell them. Services like PS Plus and Game Pass don't necessarily help that either, but they do bring in more players, and that could end up in more microtransactions, but less money up front. So the industry as a whole is still trying to weigh this all out. Nintendo doesn't really have a big subscription-driven business like the other two. They do have Nintendo Switch Online, and it does have some other perks involved with it, but nothing quite on the level of a Game Pass or PS Plus as of yet. With all that being said, we do see these shifts here in the industry. Contractors, unfortunately, being let go, while some being converted to full-time is a positive thing on the end note here.
Yeah, it's bad even when Nintendo's affected, because, I mean, out of all the major game manufacturers and console makers out there, Nintendo has always been, for whatever reason, the most stable. I know what it is, Mario, that's what. Yeah, I mean, it's not a good note, but at least they are going to be trying to transition some contractors to full-time employees. That is going to, you know, in a sense, a good thing. But nonetheless, we don't like talking about layoffs as much as, you know, obviously people going through layoffs have to deal with it. But so, you know, it's just, you know, again, the sign of the times. The economy is not great here in the U.S. It's better at other places around the world, and that's okay. But right now, U.S. Economy not doing so hot, and that is resulting in layoffs, not just in the video game industry, but really nationwide.
Right. And just to go along with that, economy wise, the world as a whole is still suffering in certain areas economy wise, but especially the video game side of things. Again, we are seeing some shifts where there is more money being made, but in order to keep up with industry trends of games costing more, we've seen the price in video games rise only $10 in what is that 20 years? Is it $10 in 20 years? Something along that, right?
What was it? So it was $50 for the PS2 era.
Right. But I think PS3 and Xbox 360 and up were all 60, right?
Well, 60. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been a hot minute since we've seen a price raise. We did get one recently, but before that, it had been quite a while. So I think the industry is still trying to correct itself in that area. I ideally do not want to be paying $90 for a game. But if there's some other ways we can make that without laying people off, that would be nice as well. And I think that's a question the industry is really going to have to answer over these next couple of years. Next up, into the PlayStation side, the blue side of things, John. PlayStation has announced their PS Plus monthly games for April 2024. We have three new games coming for those PS Plus subscribers. Your first game for the PS5 is Immortals of Avium. This is that game that has worked on in a partnership with EA. It's also been discounted a lot on multiple platforms, so if you guys want to pick that up at a discount, keep an eye on sales. But if you're on PlayStation, you can get it for free here, the base edition of the game. Now coming in those April monthly free games. In addition to that, you also have Minecraft Legends, the strategy game from the team behind Minecraft and Mojang. That one will be available for PS5 and PS4 players when it drops in April. And last but not least is the PS4 title Skull, the Hero Slayer. Again, playable on PS5 via backwards compatibility, but this one also available for PS4 users as well. I like it. Solid slate. I wouldn't write home about this. This is not the slate of games that's going to make me go, ooh, I have to subscribe to PlayStation Plus for these monthly games. But with that being said, this is a nice way to show some underutilized, underplayed games to love. I don't feel like Immortals of Avium did that well sales-wise. Minecraft Legends, I think, fell short of expectations as well. Skull, I don't know quite as much about from that indie perspective, but I have a feeling, given the trend of the other two games in here, that it probably fell a little short of expectations as well, or was a nice little cheap bonus to add in here for April. All being said and done, no one doesn't like free things, so definitely claim these games if you're a PS Plus subscriber, and maybe give them a try and report back on how they are.
You know who doesn't like free games, Joey?
Nintendo?
Your hard drive, because you download them, and you never play them.
Oh, yeah?
Or you purchase the rights to it, and you never download it.
That's just the Epic Games Store, John. I have to click download every week on there, and I don't, yeah, I don't know if I've ever launched an Epic free game that I've claimed. I seriously don't know if I have. Have
you? You're the reason why Epic is some reason losing money.
I am, but if they want to keep giving me free things, I'm probably going to still take it. That's fair. Have you ever launched one? I don't know if I have, for real.
I don't remember my login to the Epic Games Store.
Well, at least you're not claiming the free money, I guess, right?
Right.
Oh, love it. Well, there's those people too, I guess. PlayStation still has some other news here. This next one's kind of fun. It's a nice little quality of life feature. The PS5 is getting an automatic game clip feature that helps other players. So what does that mean? It means if someone's having a challenging spot, again, the example I gave at the top of the show was collectibles. If you're trying to go around and find all those journal entries or find all those hairpins that fall out. I don't know why I came up with hairpins. But those little collectibles, you have to search all the map and some are very hard to find. But also the skill challenges, right? You come up against a tough boss and you don't know how to get the pattern down in an Elden Ring or a God of War Ragnarok. Maybe it's a jumping challenge and you're trying to find the way to jump from certain ledges to get up to talk to this fairy at the top of a mountain. I got some random ones I've had to do lately, if you guys can't tell. But overall, this is a good way for people to play through the games. And if they perform well, the game's going to auto-clip the things for them. Then it's going to send it to moderators to make sure there's no bad language or no anything that shouldn't be in a clip that's shared with the community. And then if it goes well, it's going to plug right into this system where players can go to find game help and hints within the PlayStation community. So when John gets stuck finding those hairpin collectibles, he can just go ahead and click on the little tile of me playing, and it's going to pop up and show Joey finding these little things on the map, or Joey defeating that boss, or Joey climbing that hill to talk to that fairy. It should be plenty of good stuff there. I love the idea of this, and I think this is something PlayStation has done really well. When it comes to like trophy hunting, when it comes to just getting stuck in games in general, a lot of people have to look to like YouTube or look to guides or call Joey up on the phone because they just don't know how to beat something. And I think this is a good way for them to go ahead and just do it right there on their console without having to search on YouTube, without having to make those calls, without having to hop in the OTN Discord server and say, yo, I'm stuck on this boss. What do I do next? And I think this is just a good, easy, simple solution to that, potentially, if this feature does work the way it's advertised.
Joey, you stole my thunder.
Oh, yeah?
First off, kudos to Sony. This is the greatest invention that we've never had before in the history of video games. we put this on your shelf there right next to backwards compatibility that you invented just 2 years ago. Joy, this is stupid. You mentioned it. There's YouTube already. Reddit exists. I can guarantee you right now, it is going to be easier to find clips on YouTube and hints on Reddit than it is going to be using anything Sony puts on the PlayStation to try to get clips on there. Because God forbid you're playing music and somehow the music gets clipped on your little clip when you upload it to their PlayStation Network thingy that they're going to do to help players out. Guess what? Congrats. You just earned yourself a DMCA. Congratulations. Your clip's not going to be uploaded. Just go to YouTube. Last time I checked, the YouTube app is still available on PlayStation. No? Just pull it up and search, and guess what? It's there. Simple.
But give me this. Let's talk picture-in-picture, though. If this gives a picture-in-picture capability, and I can have this little screen up here in the top right or top left, and I'm playing through that same boss fight watching this clip, that would be so much more convenient than me going to another app or looking at my phone and searching up on YouTube and maybe I can't spell the boss's name. And this just gives it right to me right there.
Are you going to sit here and tell me that a small picture-in-picture on top of your video game is going to be big enough for you to understand what the heck's going on?
I think for me that would be. I'm in the minority on that.
What if you don't have an 85-inch TV like you do, Joey? What if you have like a standard 32-inch or a 55-inch TV? And that little picture-in-picture box is roughly the size of your nephew's shoe, and you can't see anything.
There's a lot of variables in there. I don't know. I feel like this has got to be reasonable, right?
All I'm trying to say is, Joey, they're reinventing the wheel. Here's my thing.
I mean, that's kind of the Sony thing to do at times, though, no?
It's on brand for Sony. It's 100% on brand for Sony. And it's just like Sony too to put out international press releases where they are literally tweaking themselves, going like, oh, look at us. We're thinking about the gamers. We're gonna give you something you already have, but you don't know how good you already have it, supposedly. So we're gonna give you this thing where potentially we're gonna give you a picture in picture on your video game after you go through our new system to try to find the clip that you're looking for anyway, to pop up. Because here's the other thing too, is I would imagine, the video game developer is going to have to, have some kind of compatibility with this system to allow it to happen in the first place. And then how do you regulate it? How do you know it's like, oh, I only want help with this one challenge. I don't want to see what happens 30 seconds after this challenge. Like, let's say there's a major lore point after you get to that top of the hill, but you have to complete this like stupid combination of 18 million jumps while also, you know, twiddling your ear. You know, once you get that done, you hop up there, then boom, you know, a cutscene happens. You know, is it going to automatically cut off? Are we just doing like in 30 second blasts? Are we doing it where this system's going to be so freaking intelligent that it knows, oh, he's having a hard time with this stupid jump challenge that the developers put in the game. So it's only going to be the stupid jump challenge and nothing else. How does it know where it's going to cut off? To me, I would rather watch YouTube like I've done several times. Go to the point in that game in the walkthrough that someone's already beaten it and see what was going on and what I was doing wrong to try to get past it. And then stop it and close it and then keep on playing. To me, pulling up my phone, pulling up my iPad, pulling up another device and taking a look on YouTube or going on Reddit seems easier and less complex than Sony trying to create a system that may or may not do picture-in-picture on your screen, where you may have to go full screen on a on this system. We don't know yet, which would essentially be switching apps in that sense, like pulling up YouTube or going to Reddit. To me, it just seems redundant and unnecessary. Are people going to be happy with this? Yeah, there's going to be people that are happy with this. It just feels... It doesn't feel as exciting as they're trying to make it out to be because there's something that's already existed. And this goes back to the early 90s and even the 1980s. Video game guides have been around forever. Some are very collectible. But like, that's the thing. It's like there's already guides out there. Sony is reinventing the wheel and trying to toot their own horn saying, hey, we're going to make it easier for gamers out there when they get stuck to try to help them out because they didn't have this before. Sure about that? I think YouTube and Reddit's easier.
I think it's a preference thing, right? Like, YouTube will still be the primary for sure, but I don't think Sony is meaning anything malicious with this. I think with crossplay, there was definitely some underhanded shady stuff in their announcements there, especially with them being the only really platform charging people for crossplay. Now, with that being said, I do think this one is just a nice quality of life feature. I feel like it's going to be, again, I am not a game developer, but I feel like Sony will probably implement this based on achievements or trophies in their case first. Maybe whenever a trophy triggers, you have the developer automatically build in a let's cut a 1 minute clip or a 30 second clip on each sides of the trigger. I don't know what that looks like, or maybe 1 minute prior to the trigger. I feel like that would not be super hard to put in. Again, not a game developer, just assuming here. But if you already have some kind of trigger in there that triggers something in the PlayStation system to unlock that trophy, I would think it could also trigger some kind of record a clip right there. Now, the picture-in-picture, that is probably just my hopeful thinking. I would hope that's the way it's implemented. I mean, picture-in-picture has been around for at least a couple decades now on the TV side of things. I think Xbox One had like a snap picture-in-picture ability too. I don't know if PlayStation did. I really don't find that hard to implement. But I could be completely wrong as well. Again, not a developer. But overall, I think this is really just quality of life, right? If you still prefer YouTube, be my guest, go to YouTube. If you prefer to try this new thing out where it says, hey, we notice you're having trouble with this achievement, click your X button or your cross button in PlayStation's case. You go ahead and click it and bada bing, bada boom, pops up with your little picture-in-picture, maybe not picture-in-picture, maybe full screen. And it says, here's a nice little 30-second clip of John jumping around and unlocking that climbing challenge.
No. No. Community game help will start to become available in select games later this year. Congratulations. I hope you're playing the three titles Sony approves for it and developers are crazy enough to implement. Just out of curiosity, I want to take a look here. Let's see at some of the comments. Hopefully they're safe to work. Intriguing idea, but this seems like a lot of moderation work for Sony. This seems a lot of work to partially solve a problem, which is already being solved by YouTube. Look at that. Joey, I'm not the only one. Mixed feelings about this.
No, I mean, I think everyone knows YouTube is the place to be for this stuff. But I think for some select audience, it's a nice quality of life feature.
Pretty obtuse.
Oh, my gosh, you're obtuse.
Pretty obtuse. That's all, Joey. It's not me. It's Sony. Don't hate me. Hate Sony reinventing the wheel and going on an international tooting of my own horn celebration. Crossplay. Backwards compatibility, and congratulations, Sony. You have solved the issue of providing community hints. Never had that before, ever, in the history of video games dating all the way back to the Atari Sony PlayStation breaking ground in video games.
We've already spent a ton of time on this topic, so I don't want to spend a ton more. But I'm also very curious how this algorithm is going to work. Like, if it's recording this many clips from people, how does it choose? It's like, oh, this is another nice guy that lives in the Northern Virginia area. Maybe we should just go ahead and put his clip up here. Like, I mean, I don't understand how it's going to choose clips either. Like, is it based on maybe it goes to your friends first and then people you're following next? And then I don't really know. I'm very curious how that algorithm is going to work as well.
Every user is going to have to submit a selfie, and they're going to do it on how handsome the gamer is going forward.
Wow.
Yeah.
It dies. Well, we'll see.
And then, Sony's going to launch a reality TV show called like The Bachelor Gamer Edition.
Wow.
It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. Instead of handing out roses, they're going to be handing out PlayStation controllers, DualShocks. Oh, it's going to be great.
What about Hinted? Hinted reality TV.
Oh, no. So what happens is right before they hand the rose out, or the controller in this case, viewers are going to have the opportunity to watch a hint. To see how to give the controller to the person that they want to choose, and hopefully influence in game what's going to happen. Joey, this whole thing Sony's already thought out. In fact, we're going to call it Gaming is Blind. So it's going to be like two gamers in a pod that can't see each other, and they're going to have to determine whether they're bound for partnership in video games going forward. Joey, this idea has never been done by Netflix or anybody else before, or anything like it. This is brand new. ABC hasn't done anything that's like Bachelor or Bachelorette or anything like that. This is groundbreaking from Sony. Breaking news as we speak. Pure sarcasm right now. Joy, I just don't know.
That would be a fun reality TV show. No. But imagine this. Imagine like a 2v2 tournament, and you had to find your partner using no voice comms. We put everyone in their little pairs. You play through and you try to find out whose play style you match up with best without any voice comms. Could be great. Could be a huge Emmy nominee winner.
Joey,
I'm kidding, but it would be interesting. I'm not going to lie.
No. Absolutely not.
We'll make them play Cuphead, too, to play. While that being said, let's maneuver from PlayStation over to the green side of things with Xbox. Unlike the blue friends of ours at PlayStation, Xbox has decided that they are not going to put out a true mid-gen refresh / pro edition console, as Phil previously hinted at. Phil Spencer, that is, the head of gaming over at Microsoft, saying, hey, we feel like the hardware currently has not fully been taken to its highest tiers, per se. They haven't really fully utilized it from the development side, both the PS5 and the Xbox Series X. So they don't feel there's a need for a Pro Edition. PlayStation, we do know, at least based on rumors, is going to put out a Pro Edition this holiday. Xbox planning to put something new out, but not a Pro Edition. So what are they planning? They are planning a new all-white, all-digital Xbox Series X. So we're talking pretty much an Xbox Series X. A few new components. I believe they've upgraded the heatsink. They've gotten rid of the disc drives, so no physical media. And I think the big idea behind this is to land the price point somewhere between the Xbox Series S, that kind of lower-end price point of around $299, and the Xbox Series X at $499. So I'd expect this thing to land somewhere around $399 to $449, if I had to guess. Overall, again, a few small upgrades within the console itself, but mainly just getting rid of the disc drive and trying to make another price point and entry point into the Xbox console market.
This looks so stupid.
I mean, it's just the same thing, just without a disc drive, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and then they paid money to buy plastic that's not dyed black.
There you go.
I mean, Joey, even the Xbox mini fridge has a fake disc drive in it. And we're going to sit here and act like this is like groundbreaking. It's not. It just
No. I don't think this is groundbreaking at all. I think if anything, it is a smart move. Is it needed? Maybe not necessarily. But given what we've seen in previous gens with these different little cuts and slim editions, they bring a really nice point for consumers to jump in. We have seen a lot of people kind of sit and wait for these slim editions. We've seen a lot of people wait for these kind of cut down editions. The PlayStation 5 digital edition sold pretty well at its price point. Again, probably a little bit higher than I expect this one to land. But all being said and done, I think it's a smart move not going with a Pro Edition. We slammed the PlayStation Pro last week. I don't think it's necessary. I still don't think it's necessary. And I like that Xbox did not go that route. Is this route necessary? Not really, but it does present a new price point if they don't go crazy adding a bunch of stuff in, when it sounds like they're going to keep pretty minimalistic. So again, I don't think this is a huge boon, but I don't think it's a big negative either going this route. So we'll see if it ends up selling.
I just, Joey, I mean, since this generation of console is already dying, it's on its tail ends, it's on its farewell journey, if you will, according to Sony.
Second half, the latter half.
The twilight, the golden era, if you will. You know, that era right before you croak. Why not spend money on your research and development for the next generation of console? Like, why are, like...
I mean, they're a trillion-dollar company, John. I think they're probably putting plenty toward Joey, that as well.
Joey, trillion, gazillion, it's all... it's just paper at the end of the day, or digital coding in your bank. At the end of the day, Joey, it's... Whatever. Congrats, Xbox. You're going to get three more sales out of people, so good job.
Yeah, I don't expect this to be a big needle pusher for sure. I think it's just another entry point for someone who maybe can't quite afford a Series X or doesn't care for the disk drive, but does want more power than the Series S offers. I think this kind of fits a nice middle ground there for the next... I really don't know how much longer this generation is going to be. I would guess probably 3 years, four maximum, but I do think we see it end a little bit earlier. Next up in the news, Xbox Cloud Gaming now has mouse and keyboard support in select games. I think this is a huge win. Cloud numbers were very slow at the beginning. We've seen them really take a big jump recently. This is for people who maybe cannot afford a new graphics card or are waiting for a new graphics card sale. Or maybe they want to plug in and play on a tablet but want to convert a mouse and keyboard over. Now they have the ability to in a select number of games. We're looking at Fortnite, Ark Survival Evolved, Sea of Thieves, Grounded, Halo Infinite, Atomic Heart, Sniper Elite 5, Deep Rock Galactic, High on Life, Zombie Army 4 Dead War. I think there's supposed to be a colon in there. Gears Tactics, Pentiment, Doom 64, and Age of Empires 2. So nice little assortment there from action games to adventure games, RPGs, strategy games, and so on and so forth. I think this is a huge win. There have definitely been times where I'm like, I don't really want to sit through this 90 gigabyte download. Let me just play on cloud. And then I go to play on cloud on the PC and it's like, oh, this is controller only. And I'm like, dang, that sounds really fun to play an RTS on a controller. Not. So I'm very glad that we are seeing certain moves here in this direction for mouse and keyboard availability. I'm hoping the next step for cloud is cloud availability for your own games. So if you're not near your console, near your PC, the ability to kind of play your own library on cloud that maybe exists outside of Game Pass. Any other thoughts on this cloud gaming move, adding mouse and keyboard?
I think it's smart. I'm curious how much more this expands to games-wise, especially with Xbox now releasing Blizzard titles like Diablo. I would be very curious to see, as more Blizzard titles roll out, what titles are added to the ability to use mouse and keyboard going forward.
Agreed. I think it'll definitely be one to watch. This next one, again, sticking with Microsoft, kind of more businessy news. This one's interesting, and I do feel like people are taking a little bit more out of this than the quote itself actually had. With that being said, the rumor here, and somewhat a rumor, somewhat grounded, Microsoft and Phil Spencer talking about bringing some other PC stores or PC-like stores to Xbox consoles. So we're talking Epic Games, Steam, itch.io, different stores out there, because as of right now on consoles, if you're on PlayStation, you only have the PlayStation store. If you're on Xbox, only the Xbox store. If you're on Nintendo Switch, only the Nintendo eShop. Yes, they both, and all three, I guess, rather, run some pretty decent deals from time to time, and you get your sales and everything going through them, but it is one store, similar to what we have on mobile, where if you're on Apple, you only have the App Store. On Google, you only have the Google Play Store. Those two are currently in duopoly battles and dealing with a lot of lawsuits, and I think Microsoft here may be trying to get ahead of potential lawsuits coming for console makers as well by saying, hey, let's open up our platform and allow more stores. It sounds like they're already in talks with Epic Games as one of those potential. It wouldn't surprise me if Steam eventually tries to make their way over as well. There's been some rumors of partnerships in that space already. I think I like the idea of this, John. I don't really necessarily see a negative side of offering the ability to get more sales to gamers and more access points if they don't maybe want to play a premium to Microsoft for a particular product, or they want to support an indie developer directly and give them more of a cut. I think this opens up a little bit more on that front. Now, on the opposite side, and I might be in the minority on this, the one thing about PC that drives me crazy, I love the access points, but I hate having to go to a freaking different launcher to launch freaking everything. It drives me crazy that I have like 7 or 8 different launchers on a PC, and I don't want to get to the point where this becomes a norm on console as well. I feel like that would overcrowd the space, and right now we have the simplicity of that one access point. Again, there are downsides, and it runs through one sales chart in the current model, but I do think there needs to be a way where we have some kind of hybrid between the two, where yes, we can buy things and support developers a little bit more straightforward through their own storefronts, but two, everything still runs through a clean OS up front. And maybe that's just a big Xbox, this is your catalog that's all together like it currently is in my games, but you can buy those games from different stores. I don't 100% know what that looks like, but that would be my biggest concern with this.
So do we know for a fact it would be a launcher on the console if they do? They end up doing this, because I would imagine on a console with the way their operating system is set up, it would, I mean, you would go to the store to download it, but it would be stored on the same drive. And I would imagine you would just need to have an active Xbox account, you know, when you do it to open up the game and launch, kind of like you do right now. I wouldn't think that there would be a separate launcher or client you would have to open to access those games, because that would literally be a PC then.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a PC. I think it's going to be a hybrid of the two. I think the way I'm understanding, and again, this is kind of a sidebar quote, but then I've done a little bit of research outside. I think they're trying to make the Xbox, again, I'm threading the needle here. I think it's going to become like a pre-built PC meets console. I think it's going to kind of try to bridge the gap between what consoles are currently and what the pre-built PC market offers. And I think they're going to try to thread that needle in between where they can hopefully satisfy both parties. Will it work? I don't know. I feel like Microsoft shoots their shot a little too early sometimes, and I think this might be the case again. With that being said, I do think this will be like an app. So I think Epic Game Store will have an app. Within that app, you can buy your V-Bucks or whatever the case may be for a discounted price. Xbox will still take a portion of that because you're buying on their platform, but it probably won't be the full, I don't remember what they're at, 20% or 30% or whatever. It might be something less, like 10 or 15%. That's the way I'm imagining this playing out, just based on some small conversations. And again, I don't think Phil explicitly came out and said, we're going to add the Epic Game Store to the Xbox console. I think he said they're exploring adding other storefronts to the console and opening it up a bit more. Any additional thoughts on this? Do you like the idea of a console becoming somewhat of a hybrid PC slash console? Or is this a little too much more into the PC space than you'd like?
I mean, Xbox has kind of been trending that way anyway after the 360. The idea of having the operating system be more Windows-based, more of a Windows-like experience, and vice versa, bringing the Xbox experience over to Windows as well and kind of starting to merge those two programs together. I mean, you take a look at Windows 11, there's a lot of Xbox features built into Windows 11. Really, even in prior versions of Windows as well, not just the gaming bar or the Xbox app or anything like that, there's been a lot of crossover. So I feel like for Microsoft, one, you know, expense-wise, like you said, you know, they're a trillion-dollar company, so they don't really care. But at the end of the day, like, if you're able to create an operating system that works for both PC and Xbox, you end up saving money more in the long run, because that's less R&D you have to do into two separate operating systems and so on and so forth. So, you know, if the Xbox becomes more like a PC, you know, there may be more upfront costs, but in the long run, you know, you may recuperate that a lot faster and turn it into a profit because you're not having to do as much work because both systems are, for lack of better terms, practically identical. I think it's a smart move in some sense. Like, I'm okay with having other marketplaces like we already see app-wise. Like, if you go to Spotify, you know, you can pull that up and you have that. You can go to YouTube and pull that up also. So if they end up doing like that, where you go to the Epic Store app on the Xbox home screen to pull that up, you know, I think to go as a storefront, I think that's fine. But I do think you should be able to launch it from the home screen without having to go to a launcher on the Xbox. And to point that out, that technology already exists, right? So I have a Sony TV, and on the home screen for Sony, when I turn it on, it has every app I'm logged into, and it says, you know, would you like to continue watching blank show? I click on that show on the Sony home screen, it launches that app, and that show immediately with a click of a button. That's what I kind of see this should be, is being able to launch it from the Xbox home screen. And then if you have to launch the app to open it up, then it does so automatically. But you do it from the home screen without the user having to physically go to that app, open it up, find the game, and locate it. I just want to be able to click the game on the home screen and then have the rest of the process automated for me.
Agreed. I feel like if they go that direction, that is definitely the way to play it. I also agree that the OS, if they have a light OS or a light Xbox OS across, even if they opt in for like a Steam big picture mode on PC, whatever the case may be, I think that does make a clean area for the consumer to move from one platform to another, whether it's a console in the living room, whether it's a cloud device on a metro train, whether it's your home PC, whatever the device is, regardless, I think the seamless ability to move your library from one to another, the seamless ability to pick up and play, kind of what we already have to some degree with some games with Play Anywhere, is a huge convenience for the consumer that has multiple devices and wants to be able to play and move as they go. And as of right now, I think it's a little closed off in some of the other ecosystems. It's starting to open up. Now we have the PlayStation handheld for cloud devices. Obviously, Nintendo Switch is very mobile in and of itself, plus the dock if you're at home with the PC. Or at home with the TV, rather. I think Xbox is the most open in that sense at the moment. Again, it does lack in some third-party, especially Asian titles, as they continue to grow their market over there in Europe, which has hit some stagnation from time to time. I do like the idea of the portability of this, though, overall, as well as the accessibility that it could open up if done well. Next up in the news, Elder Scrolls has turned 30. Happy birthday. Congratulations to our friends over there in the Elder Scrolls world. The team also hinted at playing very early builds of Elder Scrolls 6, which is not expected this console generation, but probably the next, as they did spend a lot of this one wrapping up Starfield. Now moving on to Elder Scrolls 6 and the beginning of ideas for Fallout 5. I like this. I think it's a nice, simple little teaser, nice little graphic saying thank you for the 30 years, giving little hints at what to expect coming next. But again, the nice hint of early builds of Elder Scrolls 6 already being out there being played. Again, this is going to be a massive game, guys. Early builds could mean very blocky, could mean no color, could mean no textures or anything as of yet, which I assume is probably the case here. With that being said, it does show that they are moving on and it's now entering a very early but playable state.
Joey, it could mean the worst thing of all time for old gamers.
Oh, no.
Non-realistic grass.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's a serious pandemic that we have to take seriously here as gamers. It plagues games across any console. Grass that is not fully coated, colored, textured, it ruins the entire gaming experience. I mean, that forces me to go outside, Joey, and take a look at what grass should look like. Because these games are not capable in early development of showing me what grass looks like. It's terrifying. It's honestly terrifying.
I'm about to go roll you in some grass. You are extra. There are those gamers out there, and I will never forget. I think it was Far Cry 6. They were looking at grass in the trailer, and people were critiquing it, and John and I had a good little ball with that one on the show. It is wild, the things that people choose to critique at times. Unfortunately, story is generally not one of them. It ends up being goofy things like the blades of grass or the shine on a car in a certain game. It's just, yeah, it's wild to me. But yes, there are those people do exist. For now, there are plenty of people happy about Elder Scrolls, though, and playing it over the last 30 years. So we'll see what the new one brings when Elder Scrolls 6 eventually does drop. Next up in the news in the last bit for our Xbox stories today, recently turned indie developer Toys for Bob, breaking off from Activision and Microsoft after Microsoft agreed, has gone back and decided to partner with Microsoft for their first game. So it said, hey, great leaving you. Thanks for letting us escape the Activision monster. But at the same point, we do want to partner up for our next game, which is believed to be a new Spyro game. Not exact confirmation on that as of yet, but there are plenty of whisperings and a lot of news came out today about people hearing the same about a Spyro game being in the works. So we'll see what that ends up being. But for now, Toys for Bob is, I don't even know if they've officially confirmed this yet, but a lot of sources have that they are partnering up with Xbox for that first published game. Again, most likely a Spyro game coming out of there first, and hopefully some new IP eventually from Toys for Bob as well. I love me some Spyro, John. Nothing wrong with the good old purple dragon, so I'm excited to see him make his way.
Not only is purple a great color, dragons are great too. It's two great things in one.
They are. Speaking of dragons, John, Dragonflight As we make our way over to PC, World of Warcraft has returned to growth, now sitting at 7.25 million monthly active subscribers. After a really good launch here in Dragonflight, it's continued to put out some pretty good content. I've seen you play through a number of dragon races. Always a good little time, fun watching those on stream on Discord. On top of that, it seems like a lot of people are having fun. And a lot of people are also excited with the next three expansions that have been announced and were announced at BlizzCon as this 20-year-old game continues to climb now, again, back up to 7.25 million plus active monthly subscribers.
I have never felt older than when you said this game was 20 plus years old. I'm going to go sign up for AARP real quick, and I'll be back to finish out the rest of the show.
Any thoughts on this? I mean, for me, I think my initial thought is one, Dragonflight seems like it was pretty good from someone who doesn't play WoW, but watches you play quite a bit. But I think the promise of three new expansions, instead of them just announcing one, announcing three, showing this game has life, that the cadence is going to pick up, these expansions sound exciting. That, to me, it scratches an itch that I almost want to subscribe, but I know I just don't have enough time to dedicate outside of just watching you play myself.
So it's a massive gamble on Blizzard's part. Blizzard has been very good over the past couple years of listening to fans. So obviously when Chris Metzen comes back, there's going to be hype. There's going to be people paying attention. And that's what happened with this last BlizzCon. So we were expecting the next expansion to be announced, but it was that trilogy, that saga, if you will, that we were not expecting. And not only did they announce it with the names, which in all honesty, the second and third expansion would probably still have like testing names or development names and not actually have titles. So the fact that they've thought the storyline out that far, I think that's what has people really excited. Because when you take a look at the expansions after Legion, BFA seemed crazy, like it was going nowhere, especially after an amazing story in Legion. BFA made no sense. And then after BFA was done, they're like, oh, we're going to do Shadowlands. Shadowlands made no sense. Shadowlands was quite possibly one of the worst expansions they've ever put together, let alone worst game out there. I mean, it was terrible. Then Shadowlands even loses its last content patch because it was that bad. Blizzard's like, you know what? It's bad, bad.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it lost its last content patch, and they went straight to endgame and forced a closure on the game that felt rushed, and everyone's like, hey, this is the one time we're okay with Blizzard rushing this. It was bad. It was bad. They even cut content in BFA. It was so bad. They didn't cut an entire patch out, but they did cut an entire content patch out for Shadowlands because it was that bad. So then long comes Dragonflight, and Dragonflight has everything that people wanted. They wanted a return to Azeroth. They wanted a return to the old world. They wanted, you know, something that they were familiar with something a little bit new. And the Dragon Isles has always been talked about in lore, going all the way back to the original Warcraft, even in the lore books that they put out. It's always been a land that people have known about, but not much else. We know that they've tried to tinker with it every now and then to try to say, hey, maybe we can release it in Pandaria. Maybe we can release it in Burning Crusade. And they never did. So now we get a full expansion of it, and Dragonflight's been absolutely fantastic. They introduced a brand new flight system that is now the standard in all of Azeroth and all the world. Like, you have the choice of dragon riding, which is a lot faster than just auto fly, walking away, go making your coffee, come back, and you're still, you know, trying to fly across the continent. It actually gives you something to do. It helps kill that travel time. So that's huge. The story was fantastic. They brought back a lot of names that we already knew and were familiar with. They introduced new characters that were dynamic, that were interesting, that, you know, brought life back to the story and kind of leading up to where we're going into with the world saga. And that's the exciting thing, is like, we see a path. We know kind of the direction they want to go with this. And that's why there's excitement. Anytime you can prove longevity in anything. Like, if an author puts out a new book and says, hey, this is book one of five, and you're just like, oh, I like this author a lot, I'm going to get book one, and I'm planning for the next four books whenever they're going to come out. Same thing in video games. Hey, here's a good expansion, positively received, growing numbers. We're going to tell you about our next three expansions also, and the literal mind-blowingness of BlizzCon when that announcement happened was absolutely insane. Joey, we were watching that together when they announced that. You saw my reaction. I about exploded in your house watching that with you. It was just like, I could not believe that they were going to be that bold and release those next three. So that, I think, is why we're seeing these numbers like skyrocket. On top of it, they did something they haven't done in forever. They released a patch at the end of an expansion, but they didn't tell anybody anything about it. It was a complete guessing game. There was no PTR. There was no beta. There was nothing. It was mixed feelings when it came out, but universally very positive by people who have played Plunderstorm. I still have not played it. Probably not going to. I've had friends that played it. I know people who have played it. They like it. So round of applause, Blizzard. I just can't get behind a battle royale. Simple as
that. I just want you to do one round. Give me one round, John.
I'm sorry. You broke up there. I couldn't hear you.
But
helping drive it also. So, I mean, that's probably the reason why we're seeing this growth.
Yeah, it's very possible. I think it's very interesting to take that approach, right? Like, battle royales kind of did their thing. Now we see more extraction shooters. Maybe eventually we get one of those in WoW, too. Again, I don't necessarily know if the trend is what does it, but I do think the promise of that new content, the promise of not just one exciting expansion to come, but three. Everyone loves some good Void Elf action. It sounds like that's going to be fully integrated in here. I know that definitely caught your heartstrings as well, John. In the end, I just think the promise of Metzen being back, the promise of future expansions, the innovation happening with stuff like Plunderstorm, whether it's not for everyone is one thing, but at the same time, it is new, exciting content. It's stuff that we're seeing kind of surprise people. And I think when people are surprised, especially in an MMO that's been around as long as WoW has, that helps kind of drive some of that excitement, drive some curiosity for future content as well. With that being said, congratulations, World of Warcraft. 7.25 million monthly active subscribers is phenomenal. I'm excited for potentially the future of the WoW subscribers on Game Pass to eventually get some perks mixed in there as well. I don't think you're going to get your full month for free, but I do think there will be some perks eventually making its way over there as Activision more fully integrates into the Xbox ecosystem. Next up is Marvel Rivals. This is a team-based hero shooter akin to Overwatch, and John, it looks hella like Overwatch. Even some of the animations and symbols that pop up in-game definitely looked straight out of Overwatch. But this is kind of Overwatch takes a Marvel spin. We have a bunch of heroes in here, from Black Panther to Iron Man to Magic. Honestly, I think this looks pretty good. I do think Overwatch looks good in and of itself as well. While they have made some not-so-great decisions on the development side, in my humble opinion, I do think this one, once again, does have potential in this area if they do land it well. We have a trailer we can play for those here with us on stream. But, John, what are your initial thoughts here? Again, outside of looking like Overwatch, I think the concept looks pretty fun.
Joey, from here on out, we are never going to utter that term for that game ever again in comparison to anything Marvel. Because the fact that it has Marvel's backing has already put it above that game. I will not say its name. In fact, when I saw it on social media, I wanted to vomit. Yes, does it share similarities? It does. It's a 6v6,
It shares many similarities. Yes, the only difference is the Marvel IP.
You're correct. And Iron Man being Pharah makes a lot of sense too. But yes, I get it. So I have enjoyed playing that game that I will not say, especially when it first launched and came out. I would play it. I'd play anywhere between like 8 to 10 games a night. And I had a stacked group of six friends, myself included in there, that we would play. And we would grind the ranks and everything else. You're speaking nerdy to me when you're going to say you're going to do this with Marvel. You're going to tell me I can play Spider-Man. You're going to tell me I can play the Hulk. You're going to tell me I can play Iron Man and, Joey's favorite Marvel movie, Black Widow. You're going to tell me that I can play all these characters. That gets me excited already because I have that connection with Marvel. Then you play on my video game heartstrings and, tie it all together in a game mode that I enjoy playing. I have history to enjoy playing. I think this is gonna demolish that game that shall not be said. It's gonna be right up there with Voldemort, but I feel more confident saying Voldemort than I do the other game title. I'm excited for this one. I want to see more. I definitely want to sign up for the beta. I want to play this game.
Yeah, I think this is fun. I think it'll definitely be worth diving into. I'm curious how it does in Asia. I don't think Marvel as an IP, while it still sells pretty well over there, it definitely does. I do not know if it'll sell at the level Overwatch stuff did. The IPs just being different, with Blizzard kind of being very classic over in Asia versus Marvel. Again, it's over there. It's just not quite as big, at least to my knowledge. So I'm curious to see how that translation ends up working out. With that being said, I do find it kind of ironic that NetEase is the one who made this game. And NetEase is also the company who just had all the issues with Blizzard and the distribution of Overwatch and WoW over there in China. That is a little bit ironic to me. With that being said, I do think this could land very well, especially on the Western side of things with the US and Europe. It's really Asia that my biggest question mark would come. But with the play being so similar to Overwatch, and Overwatch at one point being very popular over there, I could see this ending landing very well in the end. Now, ability-wise, I feel like they've done a decent job changing things up, at least from the trailer. I also think the destructible environments does bring something that Overwatch didn't necessarily offer as much. There's a little bit of that in Overwatch here and there, but this definitely looks like it capitalizes on it more. I mean, in the trailer, I think we saw a bridge fall. We ended up seeing a building collapse. I don't know how destructive they're going to go in that sense, but it does look like there will be a little bit more that will be able to reshape the map and change things up a little bit here and there. I don't know if it necessarily creates a big diversion, or like you can knock a building down, then it ends up having people have to go a different path or jump over blocks. It looks like they kind of disappear after the building or bridge or whatever come down. With that being said, the destructible ability, I think, does add another element into the gameplay, even if it's not a huge strategic change. So yeah, in the end, I definitely think this one is worth checking out. Unfortunately, it will only be PC at launch, so for those on consoles, they haven't announced it yet, but I do believe it will eventually make its way over there, similar to the way Overwatch did. It might just be a little bit later. For those who want to alpha test on PC, it sounds like the alpha test will be first available in May of this year, so just a couple months away if you guys want to jump in, check out some superheroes, supervillains, and what this new Marvel game, Marvel Rivals, brings to the table in the 6v6 hero shooter genre. Next up, we have Overwatch announcing its newest member to join the roster, and that's Venture, a new damage hero. Again, don't have to spend a ton of time on here. We do know heroes are going free to play. You won't have to buy that battle pass to play the new hero anymore. But we do have a little video we can play of Venture, and John, get your thoughts on the abilities we see here in one of your past favorite games of Overwatch.
Past is right. Joe, I thought we said we were never going to mention this game.
One of us did.
Yeah, okay, cool. So looks like the same game. That makes no sense. That's 5v5 now instead of 6v6. Off-tanks have no role anymore. Cool. Venture does digging underground. Awesome. That's exciting. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Friends with fake Maui. Okay. Drill Dash. Okay. It's a more mobile Torbjorn. It is... with a boop. Okay, cool. Even better. Look at that. Oh, and go flying with the drill as well. So not only can you fly through the air with the drill, which makes complete aerodynamical sense, you can also go through the ground. Unless May puts a wall down. Because apparently the ice wall goes through the ground also. Who knew that? I didn't. Oh, look at that. And that's probably her ultimate move. A little, there you go. A little shockwave action. That spreads out. Okay. Yeah. Underwhelming is my initial reaction.
Yeah, I think the burrow ability could be interesting. Again, I haven't really watched too much here, but I am curious to see how Venture fits into gameplay as the newest damage hero. It definitely feels like Venture brings a little bit more of a supportive side to things. Yes, the abilities do bake in some damage, but it feels like a little bit more of a utility play with the drill to kind of make your way through different areas. With that being said, I haven't played Overwatch in a hot minute, so I'm not quite sure how Venture will fit into comps, but if you want to dive in, the abilities are there, and the newest hero will be coming soon. The limited time trial starts March 28th for Venture's new kit. Next up in the multiply gaming news, Final Fantasy 16. For those who want to play the latest Final Fantasy, you can do so currently on PlayStation, soon to be PC, and then eventually, based on this recent quote in a recent interview with Noisy Pixel, Yoshi P stating, once the PC version is released, we're thinking about hopefully moving to other platforms as well. So for the Xbox and Switch Final Fantasy fans, you still have some hopes to keep alive over there, as it does sound like Square Enix is considering porting to one or both of those consoles later down the road. It's not fully hopeless. It's not fully a promise either, but it does sound like after that PC port is completed, there will be consideration for those other platforms as well. Critically acclaimed Monster Collector Cassette Beast. John, I was just recently talking to you about this game on your little Pokemon kick. It is getting a multiplayer update in May, May 20th to be exact. We have a nice little trailer we can play for this live with us here on Twitch. But overall, this is a critically acclaimed Pokemon-like game. Where you can party up to 8 friends now when this update eventually drops in May. Battle and trade with friends, again, similar to those other monster collecting multiplayer games that you've played like Pokemon. Team up for raid battles against rogue fusions and more. Currently available on Xbox, Switch, and PC, with this update coming to all three of those platforms. I wouldn't be surprised if we eventually see this one come to PlayStation as well, but for now, exclusive to those three platforms for this particular game and update. I love the idea of this, John. I think any game like this about monster collecting brings a new element if it can add multiplayer. I think a lot of people play these games not only for the story, but the collecting side of things. And then I think the other reason is for the trading side of things. You want to be able to trade with friends. You want to be able to battle friends. Who's the best? Bragging rights, whatever it may be. Or you get those fun little trades, like I know with Pokemon, at least, to be the ability to trade to get one version to do something, or you have to trade to get a final form of something based on an evolution. There were a lot of fun little elements with that, and I'm hoping Cassette Beast brings some little intriguing parts when they have this update drop that might be surprises on that front as well. But overall, it's a really fun take on Pokemon, or monster collecting, rather. Pokemon doesn't own the genre necessarily. They are the most well-known probably in it, though. I do think this brings some nice fresh takes to it in the way that you kind of transform into your beast. It's very music-based. They've kind of implemented different strategies and techniques to work around the way music works, and I kind of like it as a game in and of itself. Adding multiplayer, I think, is a huge boon for it, too.
Yeah, Joey, I'm just going to stick to my Game Boy Color.
Oh, my God.
That is rocking.
Did you just have that right there and available?
The Pokemon Yellow Edition from back in the day. Look at that. So,
was that just right there on your desk?
It was literally, yeah, I was playing it earlier.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
And Joey, if that's not good enough for you, I even got my Kirby cartridge right there.
Hey!
Kirby's legit. Kirby Tilt and Tumble. That was a fantastic game back in the day, too. Look at that.
Wow, love it. Love the accessibility right there as well. Good times, good times. Last but not least in the news for us, Game Informer is now offering a new standalone magazine subscription for those still looking at physical magazines. I actually like this. You're shaking your head. I have not done a physical issue of a magazine in God knows how long, but I do like the idea of supporting Game Informer here. They get some nice features every year. This one allowing subscribers to get 10 printed issues in addition to the digital issues for just $19.91 a year. Pretty reasonable price on that to support Game Informer. Okay. On top of that, they have had some very good feature pieces. As someone who reads way too many news articles in the gaming space, they have had some very nice features over the last couple of years. Sea of Stars was a big one they had. I think that was like last August timeframe around there. Some nice full page spreads for that, as well as some nice exclusive interviews. So I would think these probably also include quite a bit of that content as well.
Okay, Joey, look. 1991. That's a stupid price. It makes no sense. Why not just $19.99?
I think it's probably something to do with the year, would
Don't
be my
care.
Guess.
Don't care. Already are not interested because your pricing is stupid. Next.
Oh, my gosh.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
That's got to be like something with the year, right? Like the first year of Game Informer or something?
I don't know. Was Game Informer the stupid thing GameStop pushed on you every time you traded in a
no,
game?
No, that was, I think, Nintendo form? Power.
I don't think it was Nintendo Power.
Was it not? Nintendo Power is the one I think I had got from them at one point.
Oh, hold on a second. Let me Google GameStop propaganda.
It was. Game Informer debuted in August 1991, so that is why that price point. I freaking love that price point. Brilliant marketing right there. Beautiful.
See, this is what happens when I talk and type at the same time. Game Informer.
Oh, it was Game Informer?
It was Game Informer. Mm. Okay, cool. Great. Awesome. I guess you get Game Informer without having to get the propaganda from GameStop. So I guess that's a win. You don't have to step foot into GameStop to get it anymore. That's nice.
$20 for 10 printed issues seems very reasonable to me.
Sure. Actually comes out to $1.91 an issue, sir.
It's practically $2.
I don't know, Joe. If it was $2, it'd be $20. It'd be $20 for 10 issues.
It is, but now you have the fun little year playback. I love it. Anyway, I think supporting it would be great if you guys want to get some really good content pieces. Again, I would say about 8 to 10 a year are really, really solid coming out of them. So getting 10 issues at $19.99, seems like a pretty good deal to me, and one to consider if you like some issues. And again, you do get the digital ones as well, so you don't even necessarily have to read the physical ones if you don't want to, but you do get both here mixed in with that $19.91 price tag. So go ahead and check it out if you want to support a great company over there in Game Informer, and one that just continues to put out some pretty good feature pieces each year. That being said, John, I think that wraps it up. I didn't put a ton of topics in this week because we went way over last week, but we did still manage to get our hour after that nice little PlayStation discussion up top. In the end, I think that does it for the majority of gaming news this week, though.
Drew, are you saying you don't enjoy the random rants that we have on topics that you weren't expecting us to rant on?
It happens every once in a while, and you just have to plug it in, just like a disk drive potentially in the future.
Well, Nation, much like Overwatch, this show is over. So that will do it for this week's edition of Level Up Live. But before you go, make sure you follow the show here on Twitch to catch the next episode of Level Up Live. If you listen to the show on our podcast feed, please do leave us a review. Level Up Podcast is available on platforms like Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we'd love to hear from our community. So what are multiple ways for you to reach out to us? Joey, your turn. What are those ways?
Absolutely, guys. Head over to X, formerly Twitter, and Facebook, and find us at OTN Media. On top of that, you can find us on Instagram and Threads at OTN_media. Last but not least, hit us up with a follow, maybe even a juicy Twitch Prime sub over here on Amazon's Twitch platform. Twitch.tv/OTN Media is where you'll find us. Typically every Thursday night around 8 p.m. for this show. Recently, Wednesday at 8 p.m. for this show. As well as some other streams throughout the week. Go ahead and follow us over there. And last but not least, Discord. Come join the conversation. Discord.me/OTN.
All right, make sure you tune in next week, Thursday, April 4th, tentatively, based upon what the 2K League decides to do as we continue to cover the latest and greatest in gaming news. Do your ears a favor, hit that sub and follow button to know when the next episode of Level Up is ready for your entertainment pleasures. We'll catch you all next week. Enjoy your weekend, and remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.